Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
You know, we're going to be looking at Sojourners Magazine in detail down the road. We've been laying the groundwork for what Sojourners represents, that is, progressive Christianity, the social gospel, the red letter movement, or red letter Christianity, red letter Christians. And we left off last week examining a little bit of Jim Wallis, the editor of Sojourners. And again, we'll look at him later on down the road, because I'm going to be, I found some older materials that relate and reflects on these topics, these three topics I just mentioned, progressive Christianity, the social gospel, red letter Christianity. And some of this older material actually consists of a three-part series by Albert James Dagher of his own publication called Media Spotlight concerning the World Christian Movement. And so I'm going to digress, it's easy for me to say, huh, digress a bit to share this information with you. And oh, by the way, I recommend Media Spotlight. It's very good, informative periodical, or not a periodical, but he puts it out, I think quarterly, but he also has special reports that he does. And of course, like with anyone, I don't agree with everything that he believes or says, but he's very, very, very skilled in discernment. And I don't necessarily agree with some of his views on eschatology, but I think he's great, and I wholeheartedly endorse him. But before I move on tonight, I just wanted to, for those who care, it's interesting. I think I make a better speaker than I do a mathematician, because I had mentioned recently that I was celebrating my second year of podcasting, and actually I'm about 6 weeks short of that. So excuse me. I think it's just a case of old timers disease or something, but I got my dates mixed up. So like I say, it's not a big deal one way or the other. I'm just thankful for the opportunity to continue doing this, and I hope that you're finding it helpful to you as we look at these very pertinent, relevant issues today, for today. Now, these articles by Albert James Dagher were written actually before the year 2000, as this was the target date to supposedly evangelize the world by the so-called World Christian Movement. And, you know, Mr. Dagher has compiled these articles, or he's taken these three articles and compiled them into a book a few years ago. I don't know exactly when the book was published, but, you know, much later than when these articles were written. The book is titled The World Christian Movement, Great Delusion Leading to the Religio-Political State of the Antichrist. Now, I haven't read the book, but I find his writings to be, as I say, very helpful. And since the book is really the same title and the same topic as these articles, I'm not sure that there's a whole lot is going to be different, except probably some updates. And obviously the fact that the target date of the year 2000 to supposedly evangelize the whole world didn't happen as a result of the World Christian Movement. So that's one difference, I'm sure, between the articles and this book that he's written since 2000. But anyway, I think that this information, and the reason why I'm going there tonight, I think the information that I'll be sharing with you tonight dovetails right along quite nicely with what's been happening in progressive so-called Christianity of Jim Wallis and Tony Campolo and the Red Letter Movement, the social gospel, social justice movements. But actually, this is from a, what we would say, a missions perspective. As you'll see as we continue forth, you'll see that the World Christian Movement and where it's headquartered, and the book perspectives, and the magazine that's printed out of this location, etc. Well, anyway, we'll get more into that along the way, but it's the same type of ideas in these other three movements that we've been talking about, as I've been kind of setting the stage to look at Sojourners Magazine, which that's what it's all about, you know, liberal Christianity, basically. This material that we're going to look at tonight is really along the same lines. And as it predates some of the things going on with the progressives, I would say, it's just really nice as a little history that I can fill you in with if you're not, you know, familiar with some of these things that have been happening. Now, I'm going to give you a description of the book by Mr. Dagher. The gospel is being compromised as we learn that it is no longer proper to proclaim Jesus Christ as Savior unless done so within the context of the world's pagan religions. We are told that God speaks through Buddha, Muhammad, Confucius, and other holy men. Many Christian voices are sounding this siren song of compromise and denial of Christ. Will you recognize the deception in your church? The only book on this subject offers vital information on the world Christian movement, a most important subject. And I believe that's true. I don't think anybody else has written on this. I think there are too many people who are afraid of stepping on toes of some of these prominent people, some of the names that you would recognize, some that you will recognize, although we won't be spending a lot of time with names in the course of the podcasts to come. I don't know how much time it's going to take to get through this material, at least tonight's podcast and maybe another, before we will return to Jim Wallis and then ultimately more detail on Sojourners Magazine. So just for your information, though, these articles, and one other thing, you know, the description I just read of the book, it's published by Sword Publishers, which I believe is Mr. Dagher and Media Spotlight's publishing company, and they have a catalog of books and videos. And in their most recent Media Spotlight, which is winter 2017, this is where I, you know, so this is pretty current. And that's why I know this book is also pretty current. It's been out for a while. But anyway, this is, you know, this is a wonderful publication. You might want to avail yourself of it, Media Spotlight, that is. And then the book, which I haven't read, but I have probably read a lot of the book by these articles that I've read, and that I'll be passing on some of that information tonight. Now, the articles describe the primary mover for the World Christian Movement as the U.S. Center for World Missions in Pasadena, California. It's actually now, from what I understand, known as the Venture Center Campus. And, you know, I have quite a bit of history, actually, with that campus. That's not where I went to Bible college, but when I finished Bible college at Columbia Bible College in South Carolina, I stayed in contact, of course, with some of my friends, other alumni, and one of them was a man who he and his wife were training and preparing, and they wanted to go to Outer Mongolia before anybody else was going or had gone. And he was out there at the U.S. Center for World Missions studying, I believe, at William Carey University, which is one of the, well, like I say, now it's known as Venture Center Campus. But he was studying then at William Carey University, and I was invited to come out for a visit. Another friend from Bible College helped me with the finances to fly me out there, and I came out to California. I got a job painting houses, and I stayed for 20 years. So, you know, I'm very thankful to my friend, my brother, who helped me. John Lutz was his name. But anyway, so I came out to visit, and he was there at the campus, since, you know, this is a big missions place. Another girl from CBC, which also now is not known as Columbia Bible College anymore, but that's not that important for my purposes. Anyway, when this girl found out that I was interested in cults, religious cults and such, she said, oh, you have to meet Wally Tope. Well, Wally Tope, who I met with and ended up rooming with at a house in San Gabriel, California, near Pasadena, I worked with him with his ministry, Frontlines Ministries, and dealing with cults, etc. Kind of got my foot in the door in Southern California at that time. And Wally, though we lived in San Gabriel in a house down there, rented rooms down there, he spent a lot of time up at the campus up there. It seemed like a lot of people, not just missions-oriented people, but people involved in counter-cult ministry, discernment ministry. I can think of at least three or four others who I came to know to some degree. Robbie Maharaj was up there. He's author of Death of a Guru with Dave Hunt. And I shared an office with him and worked with his ministry which at the time was known as East West Gospel Ministries. I'm not sure if that's still the name or not. I haven't kept in touch with Robbie. But anyway, another friend, Victor, who is in he's in South Korea as a missionary at this time. I also got to visit Victor and speak at the school he was involved with there and did a two-week series on cults. So I had a lot of contact. Victor had an office up there. Robbie had an office. Wally stayed around up there. So, I mean, I really spent a lot of time up there, learned a lot about it, and I also learned some of the negative things, of course. You know, my friend Victor, he basically had to give up his office because Harvest Rock Church started meeting at Mott Auditorium up there, and they also needed office space, and so they were able to, the U.S. Center was able to get more money for the office space that Victor had. So, you know, Victor needed to cough up a little more dough or move on, and of course it was sad to me, and even more sad as Harvest Rock Church is a real problem. But anyway, I'll get more into that in a minute. Let me describe a little bit more about the campus formerly known as U.S. Center for World Missions, William Carey University, and Mott Auditorium. Those were some of the three big buildings there. I think they had some dorms, as I recall, too. But the Venture Center campus, those were, you know, some of the facilities that were there. And you know, there was a big missions thrust, as I think I've made that clear. You know, it was near Pasadena. I think I mentioned that, which, of course, Fuller Seminary was also near there. And they had some, I didn't know it at the time, but they had really quite a bit in common with one another, Fuller Seminary and the U.S. Center and William Carey University. Unfortunately, as it turns out, you know, at time we learn things over time, don't we? But anyway, as I mentioned, you know, I had met Wally, whose home base was near there, and the other folks. Harvest Rock Church, they were actually at the time, in fact, and still I think to this day, Pastor Che On and Lou Engle have both pastored there and may still be. I'm pretty sure Che On is, but Lou Engle, I'm not sure. But anyway, I named their names because these two guys are part of what is called the New Apostolic Reformation, which is the false apostles and false prophets that are running around today that Peter Wagner, while he was living, was heading up that coalition of these false prophets. And Che On and Lou Engle, of course, by the way, that Harvest Rock has also been endorsed by Joel Osteen. So you kind of get the idea that not really the kind of outfit that I would want to extend the open door to come up and rent the facilities and spread, you know, deception. But anyway, I digress. As I say, Harvest Rock Church, they held their church services in Mott Auditorium. And later, they were actually replaced by, and I've got I don't have the exact chronology, but I wrote this down right before, just before I started the podcast tonight. I also want to mention Che On also had a doctorate from Fuller Seminary. You know, I have in the past mentioned some of the regrettable individuals, or some of the teachings of some of the regrettable individuals that came through Fuller. But anyway, I didn't know that till tonight. I just found that information that Che On also had a doctorate from Fuller. And then Lou Engle, I think I mentioned he's the head of something called The Call. He's part of the New Apostolic Reformation along with Che On, but also has a group called The Call, which is a huge group of, it's a ministry so-called that is trying to reach young people, and unfortunately it's reaching them with the false teachings of the false prophets of this said, forementioned group, the NAR. Now, Harvest Rock, as I said, they met at Mott Auditorium, but then they took a step up and they upgraded to the Ambassador Auditorium in Pasadena, which used to be owned, of course, by Herbert W. Armstrong and his cult. So, you know, really you had one cult moving into another cult. Armstrong's group of course, lost a lot of membership after he died, and then they became more and more like biblically inclined. They got away from Herbert W. Armstrong's heresies, and you know, the Worldwide Church of God was the name of that cult. But anyway, I digress again. Harvest Rock moved to the, you know, they bought the property. I guess they bought at least the Ambassador Auditorium, because they had to downsize the Armstrong cult and move on out of there. Well, Mosaic, or one of the Mosaic meeting places in Southern California, there were several places where a group called Mosaic met. And this was Irwin McManus's group. And he, of course, is an emerging church leader. And they spent time at Mott Auditorium. Once again, not a real good call, I would say, in you know, bringing in on the one hand the false apostolic, false prophetic movement of the NAR, and then bringing in another group who promotes, you know, contemplative spirituality, the emerging church, liberal views, etc. I also found out tonight that Mosaic is no longer there. They apparently are in South Pasadena, back in my stomping grounds. I lived all around that area in San Gabriel Valley, meeting at the Rialto Theater, which is an old little theater that's, you know, it's, I don't know if it's like a cheap theater, you know, or if it's just, you know, an old, cool, renovated type theater. And it is that. But anyway, it's a movie theater, and that's where they're meeting now, Mosaic. And then there's a group called Epicenter Church that's meeting at Mott Auditorium. And of course, since I know nothing about the Epicenter Church, I would not be wise to, you know, say anything degrading about something I know nothing about. That would be really dumb. But I would just say that I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if there's problems with that church as well. You know, who knows? But I'll leave it at that. I know nothing about Epicenter Church, except that I believe, from what I gathered most recently, that's a church that's at Mott Auditorium. And, you know, I always seem to be near the church of what's happening now. If any of you older folks remember that expression by a black comedian, you know, he was involved with the church of what's happening now. And that's, you know, pretty much what it sounded like. Harvest Rock and all the prophetic stuff going on, and Mosaic, you know, with their cutting edge emerging church stuff, and Epicenter Church. That sounds like, of course, that's a pretty good name for a church living in the LA area with all the earthquakes that take place. So anyway, I know nothing about the Epicenter Church. I hope it's a good church. You know, who knows? That would be nice. But, you know, there's a history now with this group up here that, you know, they have brought in some pretty strange groups to fill Mott Auditorium there. And of course, they may not believe exactly the same things as the people at the U.S. Center believe, but I just thought it was a point I should make that, the doormat, let's say, was always seemed to be out there for bad churches up at that area. And I saw that firsthand. I'm not just speaking from a book. You know, this is something I saw personally that was taking place, and that's really sad. Anyway, moving on. And oh, by the way, Dave Hunt, one of my heroes, actually had the opportunity to speak at the U.S. Center for World Missions, as it was called then. And like a true modern-day Jeremiah, he was basically ignored when he warned of the spiritual direction that they were going in. His counsel, sadly, was unheeded. But I remember hearing about that Dave had tried to speak there when he had, you know, when he had a platform to speak. Anyway. I want to go ahead and share some applicable excerpts from this series. excuse me. And so we will get right to that now. We have about 10 minutes left, 9 minutes left. So we will definitely be moving into a second podcast or more. But I wanted to take that little trip down my own personal history, since I had a lot of history in Pasadena with that institution there, and of course Fuller. And that's why I have the interest and the knowledge of some of these things, is because in my study of cults and spiritual deception, both of these campuses turn out to be pretty integral to a lot of what's taking place apostasy-wise in the church, sad to say. Anyway, now, I want to look actually at part two before I look. You know, there's three-part series, like I said, but I'm just going to be lifting a few excerpts. Obviously can't read the whole thing to you, although it might seem like I am, because I am going to have some lengthy quotes from Mr. Dagher's articles. Anyway, but I'm quoting from part two, which the subtitle is called is titled Evangelism versus Evangelization. Okay, and this is on page 11 of part two of the series from Media Spotlight, and it says, Neo-evangelicism. We should understand that in the world Christian movement, evangelical really means neo-evangelical. The movement chooses to apply to today's liberal, unbiblical, ecumenical movement within Protestantism, a term which denotes adherence to the purity of the gospel. Now, this is exactly why I thought this was relevant to bring this in here, is because that's what Sojourners is all about too. Liberal, unbiblical, ecumenical movement within Protestantism. That kind of says it all. So let me move to the next section. This is in part one, and again, it's the same subtitle, Evangelism versus Evangelization, and they're two different things, but we won't get into that right now. I'm reading once again from I'm reading once again from this article, one of the three-part articles, and I have on page 15 of part two information concerning the cultural mandate. It says the cultural mandate in the reader for perspectives on the world Christian movement. See Peter Wagner, mentored by the late John Wimber and so-called expert on church growth, called social and political action the cultural mandate of the gospel. Well, see Peter Wagner, of course, was a professor at Fuller. He was a contributor to this reader for the perspectives. The perspectives, of course, is the big book, big missions book that's put out for the world Christian movement, or perspectives on the world Christian movement, that is used, of course, and promoted by the U.S. Center, or what it's called now. I keep forgetting the new name, so I'm going to keep using the old name. You've got it. That cultural mandate, and C. Peter Wagner, professor at Fuller, one time before he passed away, head of the NAR, false prophets, false apostles. I mean, how does all this stuff come together and coalesce? Well, it's because I believe we're in the last days. Deception in the last days. It's just coming from every direction. And even though these articles were written probably over 20 years ago, you can see, and I think it's important to get this history. And so, and I like history, and I hope you do, or I hope you're learning to, because I think it's important to look at some of these things. Now, on page 14 of this same part two article, the cultural mandate, it says, then, is the need for Christians to take dominion over the earth by means of social and political action. And according to C. Peter Wagner, it was inspired by the social upheavals of the 60s. So now we not only have hippies in the White House, they're in control of world missions too. It's interesting he makes that statement, and that helps me to understand about the time frame, since these media spotlights are not dated. And so I didn't know exactly when these were written, but I knew they had to be pre-2000, because that's what this world Christian movement was shooting for, the evangelization of the world by the year 2000. So they were talking about the Clintons in the White House. You know, so now we, you know, because I did the math, and, you know, came up with, probably around the first 4 years of the Clintons. And so, you know, that's how you know how old this article is, and yet it's still relevant. They're still acting up there, and this stuff is still going on, even though they didn't reach their goal of world evangelization, or world evangelization. Yeah, that's the word they use. Now, so there's the second mention of the cultural mandate, and that's very important, a very important term, because that's what we're seeing happening, of course, with the social gospel, the social justice, the Jim Wallaces and Campolo's and the Emergent Church and the Sojourners and the Relevant magazine and all these different things. You see this idea of a social gospel imposing a cultural mandate into the Great Commission. And that's, I'm taking a little segue here to mention another great magazine that I also recommend. See, I'm not just talking about the bad magazines. Thankfully, we still have some good stuff out there. The Quarterly Journal of the Personal Freedom Outreach Ministries, July, September, it's a quarterly. In 2012, that's when this article is written by Gary Gilley, who I've mentioned before, who's a terrific researcher and pastor, man of God, speaker. So anyway, I want to read a little bit from that. I don't have much time left tonight. The Social Gospel, Imposing a Cultural Mandate into the Great Commission. It says, most recognize that Christians live as citizens not only of heaven, but also of earth, and thus have responsibilities here and now. The nature of those responsibilities and their administration have been debated for almost 2,000 years. Over time, the consensus has swung from disinterest in societal problems to making their solution the church's primary objective. Most recently, a focus on the social agenda has gained popularity in most evangelical churches and is rapidly attaining equal status with the proclamation of the gospel message. A two-pronged gospel has arisen, composed of the Great Commission and the so-called cultural mandate. An article by John R.W. Stott, an early architect of the two-pronged approach, was posthumously published in Christianity Today. It stated, "We are convinced of the power of the gospel in evangelism, that it brings salvation and redemption to those who respond and believe in Jesus, but it isn't only the gospel that is powerful, all God's truth is powerful. Such a statement on its face is not debatable, but Christians should take heed of where it leads. Stott has endorsed, if not created, the vision statement of the Lausanne movement, the whole church taking the whole gospel to the whole world. While this makes for a catchy slogan, almost every word has to be examined. Given the high emphasis on ecumenical unity at all three of the Lausanne conferences on world evangelization, including the latest in Cape Town in 2010, it appears that the whole church includes virtually all branches and traditions within Christendom, including Roman Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, and mainline denominations. The whole gospel will be defined by what is meant by the whole world. According to the Lausanne movement, the whole world is framed around six major themes, including the world of violence and the world of poverty and injustice. The whole gospel, by default, includes not only the good news that Jesus Christ has died to provide salvation, but also addresses the social injustices found in our world today. That's a good place for me to stop, but you see where I'm going with this, with the social gospel stuff that we've been studying before. Good night. God bless.